got added.
Okay, well, I didn't see it. All right, as presented or as amended, I guess we'll say. Did you get that, Monica?
Monica knows what I want.
Okay. All right, all in favor, signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion passes 5-0. Contract for transportation analysis, item number 21.
I'm going to let Don explain this, but again, we are looking at any way to reduce expenses or bring additional revenue for our district.
One of the things that was brought out in the special education analysis that was done was the cost of transportation. And so that's kind of what led us into looking at transportation next. We do spend a great amount of money on transportation in excess of what our revenue is. We spend about $1.2 million, $1.4 million a year, and we're getting around $250,000 in revenue. So anything that we can do to make that more efficient would, you know, put money back into the classrooms. So it's a perfect area to look at and look for different opportunities. And the scope that was included in your package covers everything from looking at our buses, the maintenance, the routing, our bell schedule to match with that, you know, where we need to look at our training. And the gentleman here we contract with, Mr. Purvis, was actually recommended to us from FICMAT. First, we went to FICMAT to get exactly, you know, the best that we can get at that analysis. We've seen online other analysis that FICMAT has done, but we wanted to have something done quickly so we can get the benefit of the savings in this year and know what we're budgeting for into next year. FICMAT can't do it until, you know, closer to the second quarter, and they actually recommended this gentleman to us. He actually works for FICMAT as well and does these reviews. He has a wide level of experience. He actually started his career as a bus driver, became a trainer, supervisor, assistant director, and director of transportation. He works for Catway Unified School District in San Diego. He's been there for 22 years. The district has 34 schools, approximately 34,000 students. And the home to school transportation is for 3,400 of those. So it's a huge school district. You know, he's had experience in doing this, and he's actually had experience working in many school districts coming up with this analysis before. The other great thing with working with Tim, not only can he do it quicker, he does it much cheaper, the FICMAT, because there isn't that additional cost. So we're saving about 30% here by going this way as well. His cost is all-inclusive, all the expenses, it's a fixed fee, so there's no extras in addition to this.
Did anybody else see anything that it was something through, I'm not sure if it was CSBA or the California State, I don't know, about this trigger that got pulled today, and then, but then there was something else in there about transportation funding that, in effect, may be eliminated entirely? Yeah.
For us, that's on an annual basis, we have about $226,000 of revenue. Half of that we're losing for this year, retroactively. So we lose $113,000. So you have about $250,000 of revenue. That revenue is now eliminated. So
that means our general fund, I mean, not our special ed, because that's different because we have to do it. That means our general, our other educational stuff, then our deficit is about $300,000, right? Because weren't we running $200,000 in the red? By providing the transportation we were doing?
Right. Just
something
the,
like that?
For the general education.
So now it's 300?
Right. So this is a, you know, really big $10,000 investment. You know, we need to save $200,000 just to make up what we were. But if we can have somebody come in and look at what we're doing, see how we can better utilize the number of buses we have, because we can, he was sharing with us, we could be more efficient and use, you know, same buses, maybe they run two or three routes instead of just one. First, you don't have the maintenance, you have the fuel. There's a lot of economies of scales that we can get in looking at this in a holistic way, everything we have. And that way you save maintenance, you're not going to have to put, you know, a very expensive new fuel tank into that bus or the maintenance on it as well.
Well, the capital cost of buying a new one.
Right. So there's some major savings that can be done. So we saw this as a something like a national progression from special education, so as a part of that transportation, and now losing the revenue would seem very appropriate next thing to look at.
All right. Anything else? Is there a motion, please?
I did have one question.
Go ahead.
You are correct. CSBA said something out saying $248 million cut to home-to-school transportation. This is sort of the second item on our agenda where we're going outside of the district staff to do analysis. I don't have a problem with it because I do see the benefit of an outside consultant looking at our transportation system. But I'm just concerned that, again, it's the second time tonight that we're going outside of the district expertise that we hire and traditionally has done these type of services for the district. And so I'm just curious as to why this particular item could not be done in-house.
I think we want the outside expertise. I mean, there's certain things that, you know, we've been doing for a long time just because we've been doing them. Mm-hmm. And when it comes to transportation, as we've been looking at transportation, we have identified areas that we're concerned about. And we think it would be more effective to have somebody from the outside take a look at it and make the recommendations. There may be some difficult recommendations. But they also have the knowledge of what other districts are doing. They have, you know, it's their sphere of experience. And I think the cost savings could be so significant. I don't want to limit our knowledge, and I just think I've done it in another district, and that was a major source of saving. I wouldn't recommend it for everything, mm-hmm. but there's certain things that you really do want that expertise that to look at, and I think that's why I'm recommending it.
Which is fine, and I understand that. I just would like, you know, as we move forward and we're looking at cuts, to look more and more, you know, the reason we haven't in the past is, let's say, Ruben Frutos, the last Assistant Superintendent of Business Services, didn't limit his research to inside of our district. So without being a traditional expert, you still got access to that information. So,
and I think we're doing that all around. I think, you know, we meet weekly in the business, looking at budget, and we are doing that in many other areas. I think that every once in a while you identify an area that you know you could be beneficial for us to bring somebody in.
There was a lady years ago that was sort of this quasi-expert of transportation. Do you remember her name?
Lolly Bergman?
No, yeah. No, but Lolly liked her a lot. I mean, she was extremely good, extremely... Do you remember Cammie?
I can't remember her name, but we actually had an expert come in and look at things
right.
and changed it, and it was against what this woman wanted
right.
to do,
exactly.
and it ended
now
up costing us more.
But
she kept telling it, because... we went it out with the county.
Oh, you mean the special ed transportation part of it?
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, no, I was talking about the general.
This woman did everything. I can't remember her name. But
phenomenal.
But then
that's when we contracted.
She knew how to route everything, and then we decided, okay, we're going to let the county do it. And because the county didn't understand the dynamics of the neighborhood and the traffic patterns, mm-hmm. All of our students were getting to school late.
Which is where Mike came in, because I think that was one of the things where Lolly was, you know, concerned about that and saying, we got this done there. It's a really fascinating thing. But the problem is we still came down to this idea that this toying with this significant deficit that we run in this transportation encroachment, transportation encroachment, you know, but when we went to try to just say, okay, hey, let's make it simple. Let's just make the boundaries out, you know, 3.5-4 miles or something like that. And then, you know, that didn't go over really well with a lot of people. So, but I think I meant that to be facetious and ludicrous, because the district isn't that wide. I mean, that would be effectively eliminating transportation in this process. But, you know, we may be approaching that aspect, except for special education, and I think it would serve us well to have somebody else come through and look at this on an independent basis.
As Cammie said earlier, you know, we want to look at everything before we start looking at people. We really want to look at everything.
Well, just real quick, Ms. Shoemaker brought up the point of outside consultants, and we did have an outside consultant come in and do a special ed review, and they made a lot of different recommendations. And at some point, that has to come back to us, right, to talk about some of them?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, am I wrong, or I mean, or not, decide if we wanted to implement some of those that she identified as potential savings or different programmatic changes?
So you got the report,
right?
But you didn't.
Really, we had a report here, but we didn't
but
actually.
Some of the things were implemented, I believe.
Yeah.
But not. But there were some that we would have to deal with, I thought.
Well, I think the understanding was that they would start looking at those areas, and part of the plan we saw tonight addresses that, and part of the special education presentation we had a couple of months ago had some of the same components in there, and now we're looking at transportation. So
yeah.
I think I'll go back and look at it, and if we need to either do a
Friday didn't do that in a systematic way, though. We didn't do it in a systematic way.
It would just be nice to know what changes have been made as a result and what we're still looking at.
Okay. I mean, we do. I mean, it's a. We're good.
That's fine.
Thank you. That's moved by Mike Spence, seconded by. Is there a second? Tammy Polis. All in favor, say as I say by aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries 5-0. Item number 22 is budget revisions.
Is to bring the same information that's in the packages. Okay. And so just as a good starting point, usually when we get revenue, you see changes in the budget. We're receiving revenue, or revenue has been taken away from us. That's usually, you know, for some special project in restricted or some adjustment to the revenue limit, usually in the current year or previous year. So here, in combined for Fund 1, which is most of the changes, the revenue is actually increasing by $1 million from the last revision, September 27th. And I think for ease, we'll reference the different revisions by date and number. So September 27th was our second revision, and that comparison gets us to $1 million more in revenue. Now, what happens when we get revenue? If it's on the restricted side, there's usually some expenses related to that. So you'll see increases in expenses from that additional revenue. And then as a normal course of business where we originally budgeted items, they may be needed, those dollars, in a different expense category. So you see a lot of reclassification going on. So here in total, so we have a total expenditure increase from September to December of the $795,000. So we actually are increasing our ending fund balance by $224,000. So he didn't. This wasn't meant to be a formal presentation, but to kind of give us the same, you know, footing. We have unrestricted dollars. Again, we have the additional revenue of $425,000. Our expenditures are basically reclassifications of $200,000 plus the additional revenue. So again, most of the dollars are in, or all those dollars go into the ending fund balance for unrestricted, which is good because it's building. And then on the restricted side, we have revenue, we have matching expenses, and here we are fortunate that we are able to balance that out, and we have a reduction in the transfer from the unrestricted to the restricted side of the $2,000. If it's a good place to start with questions, if you have any.
Questions? Go ahead.
Okay. And the other fund balances, very quick, the cafeteria. They're buying equipment. Their monies are coming out of their ending fund balance. So it's within the fund at $200,000.
These were not planned previously?
They weren't originally planned. We're doing some things. As Edgewood is growing, we're adding some more hours for cafeteria services over there so we can get the students in and out. We're looking at other equipment there. We're trying to also improve on the meals and the health of the meals. And sometimes that needs to have equipment that you can actually cook with. Most of ours is for reheating, reprocessing, not for firsthand. So we're looking at doing that and doing additional upgrades.
But out of the $216,000, you were looking at $50,000 of capital outlay?
Yes, and that would be for the equipment.
And was that only at Edgewood?
Sorry, didn't.
No, I don't believe so. I think it's, we're trying to trade out some of the freezers at the different schools. They're pretty old.
Okay.
The building fund, again, these are expenses for improvements that we've done, again, at Edgewood and at the high school that weren't originally planned. And the capital fund, this $50,000 is going towards, if you approve the tonight with the bleachers and the improvements in the gym at the West Covina High School.
Is there a motion for this item, please?
I'll move this item. I'll second it.
It's moved by Cammie Polis, seconded by Lee Miranda Jimenez.
I did have one quick question.
Mr. Spence?
The cafeteria fund budget. You know, we have the revenues as static, you know, from September 27th to December 13th, you know, but everything that we've been seeing is that there's been an increase in the number of people that have applied for the federally funded food programs. And so, obviously, we were making revenue off those federally funded food programs, and so I didn't know if that had translated into an increase in revenue or not. Over time,
I don't believe there's a significant increase in the overall revenue. They just have completed that processing for the free and reduced lunches, so we can look at that,
mm-hmm.
As well as what our expenses are. So there may be some more. I'd have to get back to you with the exact estimate where we think we're going. Our student population's pretty level in that mix. If anything, it may be going down slightly instead of an increase. So I think our revenue would be flat.
Okay.
It's reduced for free and reduced lunch? Is that?
It's pretty flat. When we were initially had problems getting in all the applications, so it was a little bit lower in some schools than we anticipated.
Okay. It's been moved by Cammie Polis, seconded by Lee Miranda Jimenez to accept the budget revisions. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes 5-0. 2011-2012. Item number 23 is the 2011-2012 first interim financial report.
Okay. And so your packages were made before all the announcements came out today. We tried to update some of them, but the slides have been updated. So when we started preparing the first interim for this year, we looked at our assumptions we had with budget to see should we be changing any of those. And basically, they stayed the same. Our ADA hasn't really changed. There is no stimulus funding. There was no anticipation with our assumptions that the state funding would go away, even though we knew the trigger was looming in the background, and our reserve would stay at 3%. Now, even though we know we're flat, you know, we're supposed to be thinking that the trigger isn't there, Cabinet's been looking very hard at where are all of our expenses, where are the sources of our revenue, how do those match, and are there any opportunities out there, either to increase our revenue or have some way of having efficiencies so we can reduce our costs but still supply the same level of service or education to the staff. So we have those meetings weekly, every Wednesday, for several hours. And looking at that, the assumptions stay the same, as well as what we put into the budget originally was a total reduction of $5 million in expenses to be determined where in the two out years. And looking at our overall revenue, we're able to lower that a little bit to $4.8 million. That spread over 2 years still, $2.1 million in 12-13 and out year. And then an additional 2.7. Now, we've put all that, or most of those dollars, into services and other expenditures as a placeholder so that we can work with the Budget Committee, Superintendent Kaplan talked about, and the board, how can we save those dollars? How can we do things differently? Okay. Now, when we look at the combined restricted, unrestricted for the district, our original budget had a contribution actually to the ending fund balance of a negative $9.3 million, which gave us still a healthy balance of $14.9. We made the revision, which the governor said you can't assume that these triggers a reduction in ADA, about $330, about $3 million we had anticipated, is going to happen, because we don't know if it'll happen or not, so put that money back. That's what we did. That's why the revenue increased, gave us a good ending fund balance of $15.8 million. And now in the interim period, in looking at that, in our current revenue limit, slightly a little bit more in revenue. Expenses are staying on track. So we're going to end up with still just a slightly better ending fund balance, we anticipate, of $16.1 million. Now when we go out to the two out years, even though we look at ADA being flat, slight little revenue increase because of COLA, because of the revenue limit adjustments. In our expenses, you have step and column, but you have those expense offsets again, the $2.1 million and the $2.7 million in the next year. Now, that gives us an ending balance, ending fund balance of $8.3 million. And really, that's where we'd like to be at least at that point. And that's made up of about $3 million in reserves and another $5 million, which is about 1 month's operating expense. So our goal was trying to not be below that $8 million, and that's how we kind of backed into what we needed to cut, the 4.8. And because we were a little over that, we offset that with our cut. Now, on the restricted side, you can see our revenues and our expenses. You know, expenses are what they are to provide the level of services required. So that does require additional funding from the unrestricted side of about $8 million per year, and the two out years projecting it to go up to about $9 million. And anything we do to maximize the spending of restricted dollars before unrestricted dollars reduces that, as well as anything we can do to create synergies or reduce cost in this area, and that's one of the reasons we're looking at transportation as well, puts money back into the classrooms, too. It saves us money. Now, on the unrestricted side, the breakdown, most of your fund balance, of course, is going to be in this account because we don't have that on the restricted side. The $13.8 million increase in the 927 budget revision to the 15.8, slightly again to the 16.1, out to the 8.3. And again, that's that plug of savings. And definitely the cabinet's looking at anything we can do. There's synergies we can do. One of the things we've done, a couple of things we've already done this year is when we put out the bid for janitorial supplies, which we spent quite a bit of money on, we were able to save money on that and go green. You approved our American Express card for paying purchases. So we're expecting to get far more than we asked, expected back in our rebate from that. We're probably over $20,000 this year we'll get back. I know it's not going to solve our $9 million budget, but it's at least, you know, a coin in the can that we're trying to contribute again by bringing in money that doesn't take away from any services that we're doing. The board is asked to look at trends over time. So when we look at revenue and expenses over time, which is our drivers, the blue line being the revenue, at one point we were about 2004, 2005, about even. And our revenue became higher than our expenses because the state had more money, you got more money in revenue. Then, you know, we've kind of hit the wall here. And the state started cutting back on your revenue limits. That brought our expenses. We're still kind of trending based on step and column and other inflationary factors till about 2009. In 2010-11, we got a lot of stimulus money. We did some prior period accounting adjustments. So that's kind of artificially flat. The line would normally, without those dollars, continue to have your revenue below your expenses in the same direction that after 2010-11. Now, we're hoping by 13-14, you see the lines coming back together again, that our expenses can be more in line with our revenue, and we won't need to use our ending fund balance to help subsidize our revenue. You know, the fund balance, definitely need to save for the rainy day, which we have, and you can see over time with this graph, the blue, the first bar being the beginning fund balance, and the red, the second bar being your ending fund balance. Again, 2004-05, they were almost even. And then over time, we started actually having a greater fund balance, ending fund balance. We continued to contribute and save to that. You're kind of seeing a peak there at the 09 10 year, and then the trend kind of starting the other direction. And again, that's because of the cutbacks in our revenues and our expenses and our services being about the same level. Now, that's your fund balance. That's kind of your accrued money on the books. And what's real important right now to look at is focus on is what cash do we have on hand? Unfortunately, all that revenue doesn't come in as cash. Almost, 25 or so percent is being deferred. So in this graph, we're calling it total revenue because there's revenue that's earned and received in the current year cash, as well as cash for previous year's revenues that was earned but never paid coming in our expenses. And then the last bar, the greenish bar, is your cash on hand. So even though we have a healthy ending fund balance, not all of that's in cash. A lot of it's an IOU from the state. And over time, that number goes down. And it kind of trends similar to the ending fund balance, but this is actually a much lower number because we need about $5 million a month just to pay our salaries and benefits, those type of costs. So when we get down to June in 11-12, we're about right there. And again, that's because the revenue that we earned isn't being paid to us. What you see there in June, the little blue bar revenue, is about $400,000. And the reason I point to that one, when we go into the next year, there really is a little smidge in there in June, and a little slight blue, and that's only $25,000. And we still have our $5 million in expenses. So when we look at this, if everything stayed the constant and we still had the deferrals, our expenses remained the same as we're projecting out, that would be, we would know in the out year there, 2 years out, we would want to apply for a trans or find some way to just finance that gap from what we've earned from the state and when the state actually pays us. Because then you see, again, we start getting money. You look in September and in January, you have these huge revenue influxes that can carry you for several months. But we're going to have that month or two where we're going to have a little bit of a challenge. Originally, this trigger was a much bigger number and a much bigger concern. We thought it would be about $1.7 million. But it looks like it's not going to be. Our actual revenue limit should be about $121,000. Transportation, it's half the year, so $113,000. But next year would be a cut of the $226,000. Again, that's why we want to focus on transportation. The cuts will begin in February. Now, the good part is Superintendent Kaplan spoke. Special education, Kim and Ellie have been really working hard on what to do and how to do things. And they really feel that we can absorb this $200,000 change here. It will be offset by the savings that are being generated in special education by bringing some of the services back. So it's really good that we're ahead of the game here. We want to continue that focus in cabinet, looking at what we're doing with the budget. We do that on a weekly basis. Maximize the use of restricted funds. Also, maximize the use of our resources. A good example of maximizing the actual resources we have here at the district, the change of principal at Coronado. We were able to deploy current staff there. We didn't hire someone new. We've been able to absorb that workload and spread it amongst us. So that's a save that's really helping. And those are the type of synergies that the superintendent has us focused on. Next steps, definitely superintendent reviews any open positions before they're filled. We're looking at all expenses as a necessity, not just we spent them last year. Why did we spend them? And that's what we review in cabinet. Is there a different way of doing things? How do we provide services for special education? As you talked, implementing some of those recommendations that came from the last study, possibly negotiating for class size if the triggers are appropriate to do that. We're looking at this transportation. We appreciate you approving that, and we think that'll move us forward. Maximizing revenue through the grant process as well as the district of choice and formulation of this budget committee to work together as a team to see how we can create even greater revenue or synergies for savings. Now, in looking at other districts and how they had budget committees, these were recommended positions. Of course, board members, superintendent, representation of the principals from the different school levels, assistant superintendents, directors of fiscal, special education, elementary, IT, nutrition, and purchasing, and of course our business partners, the unions, talk, SEEA and with the Parent Teacher Association, so we have them on board as well. This is kind of an expanded from the previous committee where we had a stakeholders committee, kind of one representation of each. These are really challenging times, and to get everybody's recommendation and brainstorming, we thought a wider collection of people would improve that. In your appendix is all the little itsy-bitsy numbers that nobody could read on a screen, but support all the bar graphs. I know some people like to see the real numbers behind everything, so we supplied those in the appendix.
Questions?
Oh, I failed to point out one thing. When we're building the interim, our budget for the current year, what we're using is that revised budget that we just went over previous to this presentation. So when we're updating our budget, we're also using that as the baseline to go forward. So you'll see this interim, first interim for the current year, matches the revision you just approved.
What time frame are you looking at as far as putting together a budget committee?
ASAP.
Yeah. We were hoping in January or so.
We meet weekly, and I think it's helping us formulate what kinds of things we want to bring to a budget committee. But obviously, we'll be building in budget for next year, so I would hope by the end of January we have a committee together.
Maybe you can meet on a Saturday.
And when was the last time we had a budget committee?
Last time we involved people in the community. I'm trying to remember if there was anybody like that. Steve,
yeah.
Was there anybody?
I'm going to guess it was 20 years ago, something like that. I don't know that we've ever had one since then. Maybe it was because it was a colossal failure or something.
Yeah, pretty much.
It utilized inappropriate people in the community. So I guess my question... Yeah, but I guess my question is more from your experience in, where was it, Albany or some other place like that that you worked, that have you worked and had successes with budget committees?
Well, I think it's important to, when you bring to the budget committee, you bring forward ideas that they get input on, and the budget committee is to give you input to bring back to the board as well. So it's not, at the end of the day, the expectation is the board is going to make the final decision, but this is not.
I'm not. I mean, Mike's little dig there was my participation in that. That's when I first sort of got this exposure into the school district in that, and going through that process, you find that this is an incredibly frustrating process, because if you know we go in, we try to get and be involved with these things, and you find out that there's so many restrictions, there's so many unfunded mandates, there's so much you got down to I've got let's work with $50-60 million and really do this out. It really comes down to, as you've got less than 5% of that, that's really that you can work with.
My experience has been that a budget committee is also a way of educating people about where you do have the money, and we all know it's in personnel. When you're looking at $1 million, we all know it's in personnel. So, as you're talking, another option is if the board does not sit on that committee, but we bring to the board the recommendations of the committee, so the board is ultimately the one responsible for making those decisions, and that might be a better way. Or just have one board member as a liaison to on the committee to share with the other board members in terms of what the discussion is. I don't think all board members should be on it.
No.
I think there's either a representative who's the liaison, or we do this committee and bring it back to you so that you can make
I prefer that, because I think if you have a board member on it, kind of like, whatever the board member says, I think that's always a problem.
Or the interpretation that it's a direction from the board as they're speaking in that capacity. So I'm not too excited about that, but I guess I'm still, when you're looking at the numbers, you're still looking at, the focus tends to be, let's look at revenue, and then let's do comparative analyses of all of the expenditures and that. And then we come up with all these, and then we look at the director of IT. It's not here, but and he's got some nickel and dime stuff, and everybody's got a bunch of nickel and dime stuff. And next thing you know, is we might have a buck or two. We need you know, hundreds, thousands, millions of dollars into this, these changes.
The way I've done it is you get to the point of really showing that the only place is in programs and services at this point of where we are. Because we're all, that, the part that you're talking about, we're doing that in California.
Right, that's, that was my point.
Okay, we've done everything, we've tightened our belt like
this. Right, right.
And this is what's left. And what are your values? If you're talking about class size.
But you started to say something. It's program, curriculum, it's those kinds of things. Then it comes down to people. And
well, won't part of this be part of the committees for the strategic planning? Would it be better to sort of focus on getting the community input into the strategic plan and what their goals and priorities are, and then we as a board and the business services department and the district staff will build the budget from there?
I see rather that for next year, but I think this year, if we're talking about $2.1 million, that's what we're talking about, and I think we don't have a lot of community members on this. This is the members of the PTA, members of the associations, and district people. It's really trying to get everybody to recognize. We may not have the same recommendations at the end, but to make everyone recognize what we're talking about. When you're talking about $2.1 million, you're not talking about $10, $2,000. Right. You're talking about.
When I look at the list of the proposed people on the budget committee, with the exception of the PTA, the rest of the people should know what's going on with the budget, what's going on at their school sites, where the funding comes from, what the priorities are. And so, I mean,
honestly,
again,
Jessica, I think it's more conflicting interests that you could ask each of these people what their interest is, and there's conflicting interests based on where you are. So I think it's a way of...
And that's why I sort of think we're back to the getting together and figuring out the priorities of the district and developing a budget from there, not doing the budget and then coming back and figuring out what the priorities are. I understand that we're facing cuts this year, but it's still tied together.
Oh, it's definitely tied together.
And so
we're a year behind of where we'd like to be with having this plan, but we have to kind of make these decisions without that plan. I'm looking at it as a communication in terms of getting people involved in what the actual...
Well, that's different, though, than... You know, because I tend to agree is that, you know, we just got done talking about we're going to do strategic planning to decide what our priorities were, right? And at the same time, kind of doing a budget committee to start whacking stuff before we put our priorities in place. And that kind of seems like an odd way to go. Now, there's one thing to say, if we can find savings here, we can find savings there. You know, the way we do deliver services we're currently delivering, but if we're going
to... We need that committee to do that, though.
No.
Right. Well, I don't know. Sometimes you do. But, you know, if we're going to start whacking stuff, you know, based on what? I mean, if we're talking about people, which is what you're saying, I mean, what's the criteria? I mean, we haven't gone through the process. What if class size is something that is the most valued? What if, you know, I mean, what do we do? And then we had just eliminated it, you know? do you understand what I'm saying?
No, I mean, absolutely understand what you're
saying. And so I started having that conflict. If we're going to go through that strategic planning process and outline priorities, you know, then what if we just got done cutting them? Oops. You know, I mean, that's... We didn't mean it.
Never mind.
Yeah, I mean, we're kind of going like this right now.
That's what I'm saying.
It's a reality. I mean, I can't not do the strategic plan. I can't push that any faster. I mean, there's no way I can have that. So I guess the question is, for the board, is we've got $2.1 million that we need to look at, and this is really about for you because you're going to make the final decision. Would you prefer our cabinet come with these recommendations and not do a committee this year and save that for after the strategic plan? We could do that too.
I think I would prefer that. We're going to have a meeting at the beginning of January where we are going to discuss with you our goals and priorities and things like that. So I think that gives you enough time in preparing the budget to even still towards the end of January go out to the community if you wanted to, you know, revisit this at the first meeting in January and say, yes, now that we have some idea of where the board as a whole is, to go out and see what the community input is.
Okay.
You know, but on the other hand, though, you're looking at the makeup of this committee, and it's not people that are going to be, I mean, we're not going to come up with some strategic plan that is so divergent from where we are in effect right now and is so grossly changing from where we are, and that the people that are here that are involved, and you know, I see no reason why we couldn't carry a parallel on that. Like I said, it's been 20 years since we do it. I'm willing to do it, you know, and that again to see that.
I'm
just looking at time frame. We just haven't done it. You know, we've got to try everything, and you know, I'd like to be able to have people say it may not work, but I see it as a parallel thing. I don't see that, you know, they're going to be conflicting and one's going to hit and we're going to say, oh, we cut this, but this is where we wanted to go. No, we'll be going down pretty well parallel with what we have, because these people know and hear what we say on a regular basis and that. So, and you're meeting on a far more regular basis with all these people, at least at the cabinet level.
Mm-hmm. I could go either way on that. The purpose, I think, of the committee, the goal I would have is that everybody's getting the same message of where this money has to come from, and that and people walk away realizing how hard it is to make these decisions, and more, we've got to make them, and it's more of, I think, a good way to communicate and get the word out that we just didn't sit in the room and pencil things out, but we did talk about it with a group to kind of see there are competing. Mm-hmm. I think it's really easy to say what I want for elementary, what I want for high school, what I want for special ed, but there are really competing interests. And I think just people understanding that and understanding that how painful it is to make these cuts helps in the communication when you do make the cuts.
Yeah.
I see it more of a process.
I mean, I agree with that. I don't disagree with that part. I'm just saying, you know, what if, you know, I mean, there's some things that we could probably cut that aren't like, you know, we could probably figure out some stuff. But, I mean, I don't know. I just, it's such a big number. I don't get it back.
Well, I think, you know, the other piece of this that's important is that we're also looking at new funds coming in. We're taking back the special education. We are looking at significant funds coming back in. So it's not just, it's also, I don't know that it's going to be $2.1 million when we look at what the revenues are.
When we say significant funds coming in, but we're also going to have significant costs,
mm-hmm.
and I don't think there's any way for us to measure until we've actually done it what the actual cost of those services are going to be and what the needs of our students are. So it may be cost neutral. It may cost us money. Hopefully it'll be revenue producing, but with the issues that I've seen in the past, I really don't see it would be a significant amount of revenue if it was revenue producing, which would be great, but I don't anticipate that.
Well, again, it's $2.1 million that we're looking at, which is a lot of money that I don't think we've done in the past. So I'm just thinking about, you know, and I need your help in this because you know the culture of our district. It's the first time we're making significant cuts.
That's not true.
Well, yeah. In the last, if I look at the graphs that we just looked at today in the last.
No, I mean, we did cuts. I mean, there were the cuts with Vladivik. You know, there were the cuts with Fish. There were cuts with Costello. And then they don't even want to get into the bankruptcy. You know, so, I mean.
Honestly, I'm not. You tell me if you would rather cabinet come back to you with recommendations. I'm comfortable with that. It's really, I take direction from the board.
The CSBA had a great program from, it was Save Our Schools. Not that I was on board with everything with that, but what they did is they had a disc that you could plug your own budget into, and then you could show them the actual cost of what everything was, and then you program the cuts in, and you could see what difference it made to the budget. And like some people thought they had really great ideas, but when you actually plug that into the budget, it made very little difference, but it was already done. It was formatted.
And that's precisely what happened with transportation when we did it. Because this idea of, oh, we'll just get rid of it all, well, then we'd have to go to an outside service to service the special education. The entire cuts was nominal.
No, it was $200,000 because we transferred the one-time money from the state in 1995 to subsidize it. So that's why.
Whatever. It's just, but that's to your point, is that, you know.
But, I mean, if you could get a bit, like Jessica said, most of the people on here aren't going to need to see that disc with the budget on it because most of them have already seen it. If we were trying to get more parent input, it's a really good way to educate them. And they could throw out, you know, their different ideas, and they could actually see how that impacted the budget. And then what we, at mandated cost versus, you know, what we actually can play with is a real eye-opener to people. I don't know if it would help that kind of presentation to this group. But I don't think it hurts to get the group of people together and give them a chance to voice their concerns. And since I've been on the board, the only time they've really had a chance to voice is coming to the... And then we don't have a lot of time to digest it.
And the other thing with bringing cabinet on, too, is that you're eliminating that. I mean, you're going to have to then go outside, specifically go to the talk and to CSEA.
Yeah.
And we need them on board. We need them not only on board, but we need them coming in with ideas and coming in with, it's not, you know, that they're going to rubber stamp or yay or nay, you know, what cabinet or whomever does. No, they have to come in and say, look, we either cut across the board or we cut people. You know, I mean, that's, you guys make the decision in that. And if they don't have any buy-in or other recommendations or other things, Mike was saying on the, you know, class size reduction, what's the impact on the goal of the district with respect to, you know, giving the best learning environment for the kids and, you know, getting that input in. You know, if it comes to us from cabinet and we make a decision and they aren't going to buy into it, then that's a recipe for failure.
I think it's great if we have the committee. Yeah. At least that gives them a chance to voice it. If they there's a chance that they might not even be able to come together and decide what's best. But we would know that, and they had their opportunity to voice it, and we would know what their concerns were. Mm-hmm. And we could look at all of that instead of listening to it until midnight and then trying to weigh everything all at once, and them not really having us not having a chance to dialogue with them, but cabinet will have a chance to dialogue with them and maybe bring something back and ask us if we have questions to go back to them with.
I think it's worth a try.
Yeah, all right. All right, let's move on then on this item. Is there a motion for, let's see, we need to approve the interim, first interim report with a positive certification. Mm-hmm.
I'll second that.
It had been moved by Eileen Miranda Jimenez and seconded by Cami Polis. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion passes 5-0.
I just want to point out it is a positive
certification. Right. Yes. No, that's, yeah. It is a good thing. Thank you. Next item on the agenda is the election of board officers. We have a board policy that sort of moves this process along. So I believe that Eileen is in for, as vice president, would move into the office of president by board policy, but we still need to take a vote. So I will nominate Eileen Miranda Jimenez for the office of president.
I'll second.
I guess I'll move that. Okay. And it's moved by Steve Cox and seconded by Cami Polis to nominate Eileen for the office of president. In favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes 5-0. Is there a nomination? Oh, I guess it is vice president who is.
It's Jessica. Would you
Jessica.
And I'll move Jessica.
It's moved by Cami Polis, seconded by Eileen Miranda Jimenez, to nominate Jessica Shoemaker for the office of vice president. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
No. Motion passes 3-2 with Spence and Cox voting no. For clerk, where are we on that? I'm confused.
Is it Cami?
Okay. So I will move for clerk to nominate Cami. Is there a second?
Awesome.
Moved by Steve Cox and seconded by Eileen Miranda Jimenez to nominate Cami Polis for the office of clerk. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes 5-0. and board representatives on various committees. We have the city and district subcommittee.
They have anything? I mean, I haven't been on the committee, so I can't speak. But I don't believe they met. The city keeps canceling.
Is it that they keep canceling, or have they canceled the entire concept?
No, they cancel.
They keep canceling?
Yeah.
So the schedule meeting and they go to cancel?
Right.
Yeah. They say that they haven't gotten RSVPs, but you don't know that they're scheduling the meeting until you get the notice that they got no RSVPs.
Right.
Good.
What do you want?
Is Jessica and Eileen still interested in being in this meeting if they ever have it?
If they ever have it.
Might as well.
Both of them.
Okay. What about the LA County School District Organization? Anybody?
Well,
did you?
I'm on it, but it's somebody else.
You are? No, you're on the Trustees Association.
Oh, sorry.
You're on AXA.
It says me, but I actually believe that last year it became Eileen. I believe last year Eileen got that.
Because then we have a conversation about this already?
Yeah.
Like a few meetings ago, a couple meetings ago, right?
But he's gone?
No, because there actually was a vote or something, and we all thought it was Eileen.
Yeah.
All right, so we'll change.
Am I wrong?
And we had a discussion at the last reorganization meeting about how often it meets.
Okay. All right, so, and then what about the Trustee Association?
Wait, are you keeping Eileen then?
Yeah.
Eileen, you want that, right?
Sure.
You just need to be permission about when it meets, right?
Exactly.
Cammy, do you want to stay on the Trustee Association?
Unless somebody else wants it. Sometimes they have great speakers.
Yeah, but we can still go. So.
We can still go. It doesn't. But you'd be
I wouldn't
there.
Know what that one.
Mike, you can. Is it my understanding that with the California Virtual Academy that you cannot, or a board member cannot?
Well, based on the last. The second opinion from Lowell Houseman, it seemed clearer that they suggest we don't have a board member sit on there.
Okay. So is it...
That was in conflict to the first letter.
So is it...
Huh?
It seemed to be in conflict with their first letter.
Right.
Well, the first letter was all over the place. The second one was much clearer about it. And, of course, Kava's attorney says the same thing, that it's better not to have a board member on it.
Okay. Then what is it? Is it as part of their... What is it? Their bylaws or their whatever? Is it then up to us to?
Yeah, we can. Yeah, we're supposed to appoint somebody.
Supposed to appoint somebody.
Yeah, I would like to move that we put Ian Jones on the California Virtual Academy board.
Okay. And since he's here tonight and he can't object, that'll be fine.
That's fine.
Nice of you to come, by the way. Either that or it was going to be Audrey Travis, so. Okay, I guess that wasn't so funny. All right, so we've got these board representatives.
We got to vote on that.
Though. Yeah, I know. Is there a motion for that?
I moved it.
Really quickly, are we allowed to, just for clarification, are we allowed to pick a community member as the district's representation? Mm-hmm. Because as... My understanding
Mike
that Mike
was
Seaman was
here.
Going to
well,
be
Mike Seaman's on it still.
Yeah, and would just be the district representation.
But there's two slots, and they just don't want a board member shouldn't fill that second one.
Well, I understand that because the case law is coming out that if you can't sit on both, they're conflicting. It's a conflict of interest. You'll lose this seat if you remain on the board. Mm-hmm. I understand that.
Is there a way to put feelers out to see if there's actually community members interested in being on that?
Going that way.
You know, I'm fine for that. You know, I was just trying to fill it right now. So I think we can fill it right now, and then next year we can come up with, or during summer, come up with a process on how we go about that.
That's fine. All right, so it's moved by Mike Spence, seconded by anybody? Is there a second?
I'll second that. I'm sorry.
Thank you. To designate the board representatives, association organizations as listed. That's Jessica and Eileen at... the city at the LA County School District Administration is Eileen, LA County School Trustees, Cammy Polis, and at Cava, Ian Jones.
Okay, I would like to separate out the California Virtual Academy nomination and
no
just
problem.
Do the rest together.
That's no problem. So let's I'll keep the same motion and the same second on the first three. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion passes 5-0 on the California Virtual Academy. Same motion, but moved by Mike Spence, seconded by Eileen. Is that all right?
That's done.
Yeah.
And to appoint Ian Jones, all in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
No. And it's only no because if we're going to open this up to the community, it should be opened up to the community now, not a year from now.
Whatever, it's still a no. So that's three to two. Through, huh?
It wasn't.
3-2 with Polis and Shoemaker voting no. All right. Meeting's over. Thank you.
No
more questions.
Sorry.
No questions.
Board education discussion?
Wait. There's something before that.
Since they didn't give it to Mike last year, they're going to do twice as nice.
I thought you were going to get two.
Two. Yeah.
Oh, no, that's my writing. Okay.
No. Nice another clock that my kids can break. My grandkids can break.
This is very pretty.
Wow. Very nice.
Mr. Steve Cox, for your dedication to the students of West Covina, West Covina Unified School District, Board of Education, Board President, 2011.
Oh,
thank you.
Wow.
Oh, that's very nice.
It has truly been fascinating.
You can keep it in here if you don't want your children to break it.
Yeah. Well, I can't get this one. I can put up higher, but they got to that clock. Thank you. All right.
That is nice.
Thank you.
That's beautiful.
Thank you.
It is.
All right. Board, where are we?
Discussion.
Board discussion. Go ahead.
Eileen. Thank you.
I have a question. I was asked by some parents, so help me out. There's been a new traffic control put in at the high school. Can't make right turns in certain streets in certain areas.
Oh, really?
And so I've been asked, and I had to say, let me ask. So can y'all help me out?
Well, the city did a traffic study. This is what I learned at their council meeting. And they decided that because of safety issues and students crossing there, that it was endangering, the right turn onto Lark Ellen was endangering students.
You mean from Cameron?
No, from Cameron on to Lark Ellen,
that right turn,
there's no right turn now. And I've heard concerns, too, because you can't make a left coming out of the student parking lot, and now you can't make a right onto Lark Ellen. So if you live east of the school and you're a student, you're having to go significantly out of your way to go home.
Yeah, you got to all the way to Blunt. You got to
go
all
the
way
down. No, actually, you can make a turn it. One of those side streets.
Well, people are making some really strange U-turns now as a result.
Yeah, I do see that why they did that. I mean, because if you go there in the morning, you cannot make a left. Traffic's dead stopped. You have to get in that middle lane because they're waiting for the kids to make that cross. So you can't. You couldn't, even if you've got a green light, there's no traffic flow. They're stopping, waiting for the kids to cross.
Right.
And then it's the three-way light, then you've got the left and the rights and all that. So there's no movement in that right lane.
But I think, Eileen, you'll have to send them to the city because it's my understanding that we had no input on it.
You know what? This is the perfect thing for the joint subcommittee.
Oh, yes. Perfect. If they'll ever meetings.
You know, on that, by the way, I mean, there's no law that says that only they can call a joint subcommittee, right? So maybe the members
of their staff is actually in charge of that meeting from when I sat on it.
Yeah, yeah,
but
what he's
saying
is, hey,
call
you know
one and say, this is the topic. And, you know, and put some other topics on there. And
that's a joint committee.
Like
every month, just keep doing that, I guess.
Bring staff.
Do it, see what happens. Put on an invitation, see what happens.
Okay.
Say, this is what we're going to talk about.
Thank you. So
and then hold the meeting and make decisions.
The principal was not included in any of that discussion,
You should do that. Schedule a meeting.
I'm not on it, but I think that's a great idea.
Just do the meeting.
Yeah. All right.
Send them a notice.
You and Roland and Covina could have a meeting without the city.
All right.
I don't know if that would help.
I'm sorry.
I was just going to bring up a possible solution.
stops, and then they crawl the X,
yes.
X's and I.
So that allows them to call one time.
Yeah, it's a big street, though.
Traffic's kind of unusual to see the first time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is it no, it's
interesting.
No right turns when school's in session, right?
Well, it would have been nice if they would have asked
still,
for our
so
input.
What? Everybody
right.
can do it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Okay, it's, thank you. Because, yeah, parents are they're getting ticketed.
Call a meeting. Everything call is. A meeting.
They started ticketing
well,
last week.
But call a meeting. Call a meeting. Call
okay.
A meeting.
All right, we'll call a meeting then. Thank you.
Call a meeting.
Happy holidays to everybody.
Send a letter. They're free.
District office is closed from the 19th through the 2nd, and our next board meeting is on January 10th. And there being no further business, we are adjourned at 9:40.